This interview is for Women's Overseas Service League. It's the second one on this tape. And I am interviewing
Eileen Jackson Crane.
And what was your position in the service?
At first, I worked at Camp Miles Standish, the Boston Port of Embarkation, as cafeteria hostess, which is actually the manager of the cafeteria, one of the service clubs. And later, as command hostess for the Air Force out of Wiesbaden, Germany.
How were you, considered with military service? Were you paid by the military, or were you paid by a civilian fund, or were you...
I was a civilian working for the State Department. I was paid by the State Department.
Mm-hmm. How long did you serve?
From June of 1943 to October of 1946.
And what was the influence that got you into the military service?
Pressure from the military, actually. I went to my alma mater, Simmons College, to work on a master's degree for the summer of 1943, and they told me that Camp Miles Standish needed a manager of one of their cafeterias, and would I do it for the summer, or at least until they could get someone to do it. And so I did take it and consequently worked for them for the next 3 years.
What had you been doing at the time that you took this?
I was director of a vocational school in Auburn, Maine.
Was this in connection with a college, or was it just a vocational school separate from a college?
A philanthropic man decided that he would like to set up a vocational school to teach young women to earn a living when they got out of high school, that he didn't think the training that was being given was proper.
And in the service, you were a hostess in clubs and cafeterias?
Yes, they named us hostesses because I guess we worked in social clubs, but actually we had authority. Army regulations gave us authority, and we had professional ratings.
Did you feel that this experience was going to prepare you for a future career, or was it just something that you did out of patriotism or whatever?
No, I already had my career, and I did it because they asked me to fill in, and then I found out that I really enjoyed it, and went on from there.
Did you go back to your career at a later time, or?
No, I married a young man that I had known for 6 years. Actually, I didn't meet him in the service. And I did go back to teaching in New York City as a substitute teacher for about 8 months.
What kind of pay did you receive in the military?
Better than I had in the civilian life. At first it wasn't that much better, but by the time I finished I was earning about, I think, $5,200 a year.
Did that compare to what teachers were getting at the time you got out of the service?
I don't think teachers were paid quite that well.
So your pay in the military was in excess of what you would have gotten had you
continued
as a civilian?
It was better, yes.
Was there any discrimination against you because you were a woman, or?
No, we experienced no discrimination. The Army regulations designated that these jobs were to be held by women, and that's...
Was there any educational opportunities in there other than just the broadening experience of travel?
No educational advantages.
And these, as you say, these assignments were listed as women's categories.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What kind of housing did you have?
At Camp Miles Standish, it was excellent. We had an established Cape Cod cottage on the base that was very comfortable. The only problem I had was I had to go through someone else's room to take a shower. But other than that, it was very, very comfortable.
Did you have any, did you receive medical care, or did you have to go to civilian doctors off base?
We had to furnish our own, all of our own care. In this country. Overseas, we were allowed to go to the medical, but I only once went to a doctor.
Before you went overseas, did you have, were you allowed to eat in the mess halls, or did you have to eat away from the military also?
We never ate with the military in the States. I ate service club over if I was working over a meal, but other than that, we were responsible for our meals.
And you were given a, were you given a food sustenance in the States, or was it only when you were overseas that you were given allowance for?
We were only given an allowance overseas. No,
and was that true also of housing, or in the States you said you lived on base?
In the States we lived on base.
And did you have to pay up a stipend?
It was a small amount, very small amount.
And was that considered part of your salary, or?
I think it was.
Tell me some of the things that happened to you while you were in the service that you remember most distinctly.
Well, I'll start with the most difficult thing in at Camp Lyle Standish. We knew when we were getting a large number of men into the camp to be shipped out. The station complement was 200, and my club was used at noontime mostly to feed the civilians working on the base. But when we got a battalion in, or even less than a battalion, they would tell us how many were coming in, and we knew that we had to really gear up, and we were given strict orders, never run out of apple pie. So we never did, but we never knew when the troops were leaving because of security reasons. So we might be geared up to feed 3,000 the next day and wake up in the middle of the night and hear hut 2, 3, 4, knowing that we were probably going to be left with about 200 at base, and sometimes I had 8 cases of apple pies ordered, so that was a little bit difficult.
Well, did you have cooks and cafeteria workers?
I had 30 people working under me in the cafeteria.
And were cooks and bakers among them, or did you get all your food brought in?
No, cooks. We had cooks. And for the last 3 months that I was in the States, we had 4 Italian prisoners of war that were assigned to the...
Okay, we'll go from there.
See, I've had a cold.
What other memorable experiences did you have overseas that were...
Well, overseas, I had a great many of them. It'd be too many to mention all of them. But the first trip I made to set up my first service club in East Latoube outside of Marseille, I flew in a B-17 with a young pilot, and we got over the Alps, and they discovered that the hydraulic defrosting equipment wasn't working, and that the ground crew hadn't put any manual defrosting equipment in, so we were told to get into our parachutes that there was a possibility we might go down, but fortunately we made it. And then coming back one time from East of the Tube, it was in a B-29, we got over Paris and couldn't find the airfield. Another young pilot who was his first trip, and he was taking a heading for Orly Field, and they were giving directions to land at Villa Coublay, and after about 4 or 5 tries, they did find that the solution, and we did come into Villa Coublay without problems.
Did you have a language difficulty with the local people, or did you speak French, or did you learn to speak French?
No, we did not have to speak any foreign languages. Practically all of our communication was with the troops and the American people. We weren't allowed to fraternize with the German people. We were not allowed to buy things in the stores. So we really didn't have very much contact. We had a German civilian secretary, my roommate, who was the command librarian, and I shared a secretary. She spoke English quite well. So we really didn't have any problem.
And how long were you in France, and then did you go from there to another station, or?
Yes, I arrived in Paris in September of 45 when the Air Force discovered the Army had hostesses to set up service clubs, which they felt they wanted to do at the same time, and so I was assigned directly to the Air Force, and it was the command hostess since I had a senior rating. We stayed in Saint-Germain, which was the Air Force headquarters outside Paris, for about 3 weeks, and then moved to Wiesbaden, Germany.
And in Wiesbaden, did you stay in the town of Wiesbaden, or did you have a military station outside of town?
No, we stayed at one of the hotels, there were three large hotels right in the center. I stayed at the Palast Hotel, which then was used to have to house field grade officers from major up to lieutenant colonel.
Do you see any comparative, anything that compares today with USO hostesses in the service or with hostesses in the military service compared to what you did when you were in? Or haven't you had a chance to compare?
I haven't really compared. I mean, I was married soon, within a few months after I got out of the service, and I really haven't checked back.
Did you find any conflict in being female and being in the service?
No, none at all.
Just went along as if
yes,
you had...
Yes, that was my job, and everyone understood that this was...
And being a civilian employee, you did not have any GI Bill of Rights or anything like that?
No, we had to follow the rules, especially overseas, that applied to the military. But they were not difficult
to follow.
But
you were not given any veterans benefits or anything of this sort when you got out?
No, we were strictly civilians.
And was there any great adjustment that you had to make in any particular area in wearing a uniform or living with others or following regulations? Or?
Actually, no. It might have been difficult had we had civilian clothes with us over in Germany. But we were told just to take enough uniforms, a change of uniforms, that we would probably get our footlockers in a month or so. We didn't get our footlockers until about 7 months later, so all we had were uniforms to wear, so it wasn't very difficult to comply with.
And what did you do after you got out of the service?
I got married.
And you never went back, or you went back to teaching then, or?
I taught for about 8 months after I was married. Since I was bored in New York City in a one-room apartment, I did substitute teaching. But I had known my husband before I went into the service, and this wasn't a related romance to the service.
And did you find that your time in military service in any way prepared you for civilian life?
No, not really. I hope I contributed to making it a little bit more pleasant for the men that were going overseas or that were overseas, but other than just a pleasant experience for me, and I did learn to cope with a few hardships, that they weren't really that bad.
What was the greatest number of hostesses that you had working under your command at any one time?
About 14. I set up 10 clubs while I was there in 13 months. And we could only assign one hostess to each club to begin with the exception of a club, a black club that we set up, and we had two black hostesses assigned to that.
And you still had the segregation of the services,
yes,
black and white?
Yes. This, of course, the Air Force in those days was part of the Army. It was the Army. We were designated USAAFE,
yes.
United States Army Air Forces in Europe.
I wondered because I had understood that under Eleanor Roosevelt's ages, the segregation of the troops and the services had been pretty much obliterated in late 44 and early 45, and I just wondered how long it took them to actually get around to doing this.
Well, we didn't. This hadn't filtered down to
you
us
didn't
at
see
that
it
point.
In your place.
No.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
I don't think so, except that it was a very pleasant experience for me, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Eileen.